7 PM on Wednesday, September 6th. Just want to welcome Jeff Kruzak as our new board member. So welcome to our board, Jeff. First item of business is to approve the minutes. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
A second?
To approve the meeting minutes from August 2nd, 2017. It's been moved by, Jan, did you move?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Tronson and seconded by Mr. Keen. Is there, are all those in favor? Is there, is there any discussion? Let me ask that first. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, unanimous? And then we need to set the order of agenda.
So moved.
Mr. Walters moved,
second.
Mr. Tronson, all those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous? So the next item is a public hearing on variance number R2017-006 VAR. Could we hear the staff report, please?
So the applicant's request for this variance is a variance to section 62.222 of Rochester Zoning Ordinance to allow for an attached garage and two-story addition to be set back 6 feet 6 inches from the side property line and 5 feet 2 inches and 5/16 from the rear property line. This is an aerial map of the property. The house is the one with the green dot and 938 on it. The blue lines show the property lines and the existing structures, and the red lines indicate a 5-foot utility easement on either side of the rear property line. This is the site plan that the applicant submitted showing the existing house and the proposed addition. Currently, the existing house is 18 feet 1 inch at the closest point to the rear property line, and it's proposed to be 5 feet 2 inches and 5/16 from the rear property line, which is pretty close to the utility easement. The requirements for that utility easement will be that no part of the footing or overhang can be in the easement, including the airspace above the easement. And then the side addition of 9 feet is proposed to be 6.5 feet from the side property line, where the existing house currently meets a setback of 15.5 feet. This is a photo of the house. It's the yellow one on the left. It would be a two-story addition, and then the second stall for the attached garage. These are the elevation drawings that the applicant submitted showing the addition on the different elevations that would be affected. These are the floor plans for the addition. There will be an addition for the foundation and basement, for the main floor to include the second garage stall, a pantry, a kitchen, and the second floor will have a living room, master bedroom, closet, and bathroom. This table shows what the existing setback condition is, what the proposed setbacks are, the standard required setback in the R1 zoning district, and then there is a provision in section 63.110 subdivision 5 that allows a reduction of the setback based on the fact that the lot is not 100 feet in length for its depth. It's 70 feet deep in the portion of the property where the addition is proposed. So they're allowed a 30% reduction of the required 25-foot setback. So then the required setback would be 17.5 feet for the back, and that provision does not change what the standard side setbacks would be. Again, the applicant is requesting a variance to section 62.222 of the Rochester Zoning Ordinance to allow for an attached garage and two-story addition to be set back 6.5 feet from the side property line and 5 feet 2 and 5/16 inches from the rear property line. Staff findings, as outlined in the staff report, do not support approval of the variance request. The applicant meets criteria B and F, but does not meet criteria A, C, D, and E of the 6 required criteria for variance approval. Are there any questions?
Could you expand a little bit on criteria? I think it was D that you had on that list.
Anything specifically that you want to use?
You said it didn't meet that criteria?
Correct.
Can you explain? I mean, for the purposes of the people who are public that gathered here, I thought it would be helpful to just discuss what you've already included in there, as well as criteria E.
Sure. It might be helpful to see the aerial map. This block that the home is on, and all the adjacent properties, those are all homes that were built in the 1950s and 1960s. Almost all of them on this block have a one-car garage, and all of them are one-story. Across the street to the north, there are homes that are two levels with two-car garages, but those ones are very different in style than the ones on this side of the street, and all of the homes on this block are generally the same. You can see on this aerial map, you can sort of tell by the driveways that are shown on here. Almost all of the driveways you see on here are for a one-car garage. So again, for it to be a two-car garage and to be two stories, it would be the only two-story home on this block. And the height of the building closer to the building to the south, the one at 935, and the building to the west, the one at 944, would leave very little separation between the structures, let alone meeting the required setback distances, which are measured to the property lines.
And for the record, could you just read the criteria D and E?
The criteria D says the variance will not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to other property in the area and will not alter the essential character of the locality. Do you want E as well?
Yes, please.
E says the variance is in harmony with the general purpose and intent of this ordinance.
Can I safely presume that in criterion D, your issue is with the essential character of the locality, not so much that it's going to harm the public welfare?
Correct. I don't believe that anyone will be harmed by the addition, but it will change how this house fits in with the rest of them on the block.
Thank you.
Other questions for staff?
Back on this criteria, is there any concept in the ordinance about keeping things similar as opposed to a good variety on the street? I'm struggling with the idea that it's detrimental because it's different, even though it would be a new, nice addition. I'm just trying to get comfortable with that.
For structures that meet the zoning ordinance requirements for setbacks, height, landscape coverage, everything, there's no requirement on having everything be the same or having things be different. But it is one of the variance criteria that you would be looking at.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question that drive by and look at is that you say everything kind of standard, but the driveway there is they've actually poured concrete and they actually got, it would appear to me that if you want to set a bolt or something on the other side of the garage or whatever it is, that that driveway, the cement guy actually goes around the side of the garage. So when you look at it, it already is a little different than the rest of the driveways going into the one garage structure, because you actually have the cement going around to the side of the garage already going over by the property line. Is that correct? I mean.
Yes. Parking in the side yard is permitted. So how they've got that driveway poured is permitted.
No, I understand what I'm saying, but it's, when you say it's similar to the same, I'm saying it already is not similar to the driveway because of what they've done. It is a little bit different, a little bit wider, a little bit different than what they've done. You can answer my question.
Would the garage come to the edge of where that driveway is, essentially?
It's hard to measure, but approximately to where that is poured, but it would come all the way to the back of the house. Where the poured concrete ends at the back of the garage, the addition would come to the back of the house.
Other questions for staff? Okay, thanks, John. Staff report is now closed. We will now open the public hearing. Is the applicant here? Would you please come forward and state your name slowly, name and address slowly and clearly?
I am Michael Hayden. My address is 615 7th Avenue Southwest. So this is a project that is about four blocks down from my house. My client, who just stepped out with his little girl, they really love the neighborhood. Their family's growing. They want to increase the size of their home. They don't want to leave the neighborhood because of the fantastic schools we have, with Falwell being one of the best elementary schools that we have. And they've just generally really fallen in love with that neighborhood. So they want to try to modify this home to meet their growing family's needs versus building a new house or moving out to a neighborhood that doesn't have the architectural character, the mature trees, and quite honestly, probably the best public school in town right in their backyard. When we talked about it, we decided to go up, they really want a two-car garage, and they wanted to add a bedroom. It's like, well, okay, we can do this, but if we may bump this out the back, where, as you can see in the picture, there's already an existing deck. So basically, we're going to use that footprint while widening the house out enough to create a two-car garage. That was the intent of the project. Add a bathroom to the home, add a bedroom to the home. In that footprint, we can increase the size of the kitchen and make it a very nice home for a family that is growing to be able to stay in and stay in the neighborhood that we're in. That was the thought process behind the entire thing.
Questions? Are you an architect?
No, I'm a contractor.
Okay, all right. And you understand that we make a decision based on these criteria?
Yes.
Would you like to address any of the criteria specifically?
Well, part of the criteria I'd like to address is if you were to expand this picture down about another four houses, there's a two-story addition that has been built on a house that would actually look very similar to this house, should it be done. Now granted, they do have a one-car garage, but it appears to have been a single-story home that somebody took a portion of and went up two stories with it.
I have a question about that. So we've kind of had a lot of talk already tonight about the one-story versus two-story, but I think that technically without a variance, you can go two stories. The real issue is the fact that you're getting closer to the property lines.
Right.
Were you able to work with your clients to consider options to add height to the house without getting closer to the property lines? And if so, or if not, is there any backstory there?
Well, the initial intent of it was, okay, we want a bedroom, but we also would like a two-car garage. So we wanted to come to this side of the property where the garage was already existing. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, that pad is poured there. It's like, well, that would be a great spot. And obviously, with the way it's laid out, there's no other way to get a two-car garage on that house either. Nor is there any other, if you look at the setback on the other side of the property, it's significantly less. Now, to go up two stories with a portion of the house, yes, that would be possible to do. But part of the desire of it was to also acquire a two-car garage.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak about the variance?
I don't
know. You can sit down.
All right. I'm Patrick Murphy. I'm a resident owner across the street, 937 11th and Quarter Street. Just want to make it a record that I support the project. This neighborhood is a growing neighborhood with a lot of young professionals that work downtown. We're finding out that it's increasingly harder to afford the homes closer to the Pill Hill area or higher, higher up in the neighborhood, closer to downtown. So a lot of people are migrating to this neighborhood because it is more affordable. Now, with affordability comes some comforts that you can't have. Single car garages, you know, less than, you know, three bedrooms, stuff like that. So to see a project like this where you still have that mix of affordability and be able to put on an addition or expansion to you get some of those comforts that you want, I think it's great for the neighborhood. I also want to reiterate, two houses down, they put a two-story addition on that side of the street as well. So I do think it's good to see a good mix within the neighborhood, and from my perspective, living across the street, I don't think there's any issue with that. So again, I want to make a record, I support the variance request.
Any questions? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
So the public hearing, would anyone else like to speak about the variance?
Yeah, I'm the homeowner.
Can you tell us your name?
John Ryan.
Renning?
John Ryan.
Ryan. And your address is, just for the record.
938 11 and 4th Street.
Sorry. Thank you.
Yep. So I'm the owner of this property. I have spoken with the neighbors around the entire, all of our property lines, and they're all fully in support of it. As you can see, there's already kind of an encroachment on our property to begin with the neighbor on the west side of our house. Their air conditioner actually sits on our property or close to it. But I just want to kind of add that you see a lot of cars parked on the street too, which is another thing. We would like to not have one car on the street at all times. I mean, with two kids plus, you know, more coming. We want to keep our cars in garages in the winter, and to keep cars up the street, I think, would be a benefit to the neighborhood. There are more two-stall garages on this side of the street. There are a couple detached garages. There's one attached one for sure. All the ones across the street are basically two-stall garages with multi-levels, so I just wanted to correct that. And with, I'm a real estate broker in town, I know the market very well. And with more and more people trying to get into this area, more families, houses are going to have to get bigger in this area because of the demand. More people are buying, fixing up, adding on to the homes. I feel like these setbacks are going to get, as you see in other urban cities, closer and closer. And I think that's just a natural progression of a growing city. So I just wanted to reiterate, we have support from for sure, all these neighbors next door. We really appreciate, you know, the chance to expand it. So thank you for hearing it.
Any questions?
How long have you been in this home?
4 years now.
Anyone else? Question? This is a public hearing. Is there anyone else who would like to speak about the variance?
Yeah, I'll, Cordy Walker just moved it up the street to 1019. 1019 on 11th Street. But just also in support of this, we just moved 2 months ago to the neighborhood, just moved back to Rochester, and as part of, you know, being the neighborhood now, just love to see any projects that are increasing the value of all of our neighbors' homes and our home. So really in favor of this kind of work going on in the neighborhood. Is just, it helps everybody. Helps everybody out. So just also in favor of this project and more projects like this going forward.
Any questions? Thank you. Yeah. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone else who would like to speak about the variance? This is a public hearing. Is there anyone else who would like to speak about the variance? And last time, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone else who would like to speak about the variance? Okay, the public hearing is closed. Is there a motion? Okay, would you like to discuss it first?
Yeah. I'm going to make a motion.
Okay.
I move to deny a request for variance at this time, consistent with the recommendations of the Planning Department.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion made by Mr. Lockridge, seconded by Mr. Walters. Discussion.
the reason I made the motion is not because of the two-story, but because of the overhang that's going to exist over the utility area and the extreme closeness that this will bring the new building, the proposed building, to an adjacent property line. We don't have any idea what's going to be happening in the future with other properties, but at this point, it's a pre-code non-conforming use. In other words, it's legal the way it is now. But if one were to build on that lot today, they wouldn't be able to build the structure that's there today because the code would prohibit it. To add to the current structure with a building that further diminishes light space, access by emergency vehicles, and otherwise causes a real small squeeze there, is, I think, inappropriate, and I think we're bound by the criteria that is established for us to try to meet for every variance request. And in this case, I think staff was correct in assessing the circumstances. So I would urge to vote in favor of denial of the variance request.
I second it because second the motion for denial because. When I look at the criteria in front of us, one is the irregularity of the land. And here we have a lot that's not a rectangle, it's an irregular quadrilateral. But I think that only gets you so far, and I think that only kind of justifies moving building closer to the back lot. Although that, of course, raises the question with the easement as well. When it comes to the side lot, you know, the criteria in front of us, sideline, the criteria in front of us are all about what is unique about this piece of land that is different from the rest of the neighborhood. And here, I just don't see it. So I think on a black and white reading of the criteria in front of us, I don't think we can grant it. And it's not because I'm against the idea or the project or the desire of the family to stay in the home. I support all those things. I support the two-story concept. I think that I agree with them. The two other things I'd like to say, especially to the applicant here, is first, please forgive me for not having a packet on my computer. Don't think that the lack of having my packet in front of me means lack of preparation. But the second thing is that I think, and we've seen this a few times, we've got something where we've got a very legitimate complaint about how restrictive our sideline rules are. I think the city probably does, you know, be way too strict about how close you're allowed to get to the side lot line. But the way to fix that is to fix that, not to do variance, one variance at a time. So
I guess I understand that as you build this, I guess when you buy a piece of property, I hear your concern that you would like to stay in the school. It's a nice neighborhood that you like that. I think that's all something that, that's why I asked you how long you've been there, 4 years ago, you built there. But you, when you bought the home and built there, you understood what was there. I also heard you say that in more urban things, we need to get tighter and tighter. That's not necessarily true, that we need to do that. I think we have our rules and regulations set for a reason. And as I see more come before us, it seems that I have no problem with the two-story structure going up, but again, it goes outside the guidelines. So you bring something to us that we're kind of bound by what we have, criteria we have to meet and what we can say and what we can do, that you could actually expand your home and go up with it and make more room for your family minus the garage. Minus, and everyone would like to have a two-car garage. I understand that. We live here in the winter, we do that. That's why I asked about the side driveway to get the car off and what's there. So, as much as I would like to speak against the motion, I have to support the motion to deny it on, again, not on the two stories, but just on the lot lines and everything else. And I think that's very litigious when we, if you're in the real estate business, we do that when you buy something. Sometimes we have to think about our future and our families and different things, and we just can't change everything to make it fit for everybody all the time. So, but I did hear your concerns. I have looked at it, and I would like to say, but I again, there are reasons that we're wrong by it.
I too feel I'm going to support the motion to deny. I mean, I feel this is the second or third time in the short time I've been doing this that I see these odd-shaped lots in the southwest trying to conform to the hills and the sides, the twist, the small lot. I'm going to respect the standards that are there and try to have us work within those until they're changed. And based on that, I would support the motion to deny.
Any further discussion?
I'll just speak. First time speaking, new to the board, would love to be able to support it, but just going for the same reasons, fitting with, you know, the conditions, we'll have to support the motion.
Yeah. All right. So we have a motion on the table. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? It's unanimous. All right, next on the agenda is the social media policy.
Ms. Chair, I just wanted to make a statement.
Yes.
Maybe going back to the drawing board would be an opportunity. If you seriously think that, and I would seriously think that there's a further avenue for you to pursue this particular plan, there is an appeal process to the council, the city council. But I would definitely talk to council members before you spent the money to do that to see if there was likelihood that there was going to be any movement on that in this particular location.
Okay.
I can see if Linda's out there because I think she's the one doing the
social
media.
Yes. Yep.
So I'll just go check.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Michael.
You always make me make a bad motion, sir.
That's fine.
I guess we could have discussed before. That's why I was going to say that. Kind of explain that. I got some more time.
All right. Enjoy.
Social media.
See ya.
See you tomorrow.
This is our continuing zoning board.
Yeah. Michael Sprinkle's presentation is over, so that's probably
my live stream.
There you go.
Yes.
Good evening for those of you who I have not had the privilege of meeting. I'm Linda Hillenbrand, the director of HR, and I appreciate having some time on your schedule tonight to talk about the social media policy that the city recently implemented. By way of background, it was about a year ago that the City Council passed along a directive to me and our team to implement and actually research and develop first a social media policy for the betterment of the organization. And so we went to work. We knew it would be kind of a controversial policy to write because social media is a really big thing these days. And there's a lot of organizations that have social media policies, and there's some that do not, and there's reasons for both sides of that equation. But nonetheless, the City Council felt it would be best for us to move ahead and pursue this this process of developing the policy, and so we did that. And the policy went before Council last November, and the original policy that went forward included employees, boards and commission members, and volunteers. But the balance of the policy was really written in the format of referring to employees for the most part, even though it had that reference point in the introductory clauses of the policy. So fast forward a couple months, February, March, it was brought to my attention that the policy was confusing because even though it said it covered boards and commission members, it refers to employees throughout the policy. In addition, there were sections of the policy that talk about web design, content management of certain websites in the city, which did not pertain to commission members. So we modified the policy, took it back in April for approval, again a second time with those two modifications. We identified which sections specifically applied to boards and commission members and which applied to employees only. And that was the only changes that we made. They were actually minor in scope. So, excuse me, tonight we will be going through the social media policy.
And so what we'll cover is basically an overview of the policy, which includes the definition of social media, the purpose behind the policy, the personal use of social media, how that impacts you as a board member, your freedom of speech rights. We'll talk about how complaints are handled in the city. And then I also will reference a Fourth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals case, just for those of you who are really interested in delving a little bit deeper into the subject. Oops, going the wrong way there. Okay, by way of definition in our policy, we define social media, excuse me, as a means of electronic communication, internet and mobile-based applications, email, websites, and functions for sharing and discussing information where users can post photos, video, comments, and links to other information to create content on any imaginable topic. And what makes social media so beneficial in our day is that it amplifies the distribution of messages to very large audiences in a very fast and oftentimes an effective manner. So it's a good thing to have on hand. Sorry. So by way of example in the policy, and of course we acknowledge that this is an ever-evolving list, but we say social media will include social networking sites such as Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, and online dating sites, blogs. Video and photo sharing sites, and Twitter.
So it doesn't, if I wrote a letter to the editor, that does, it's not under the social media, that would be something different.
No, that'd be, yeah, that'd just be ongoing communication, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So is there other standards for letters to
unless
the editor?
It's, excuse me, unless it's maybe posted on their website.
Yeah, sure.
So
I'm not going to drill down on this, but I just want to, we did see a need to have a social media policy, and now we have to decide where it starts and ends. But
yes.
Where it ends, what covers our behavior outside of there?
Well, why don't you let me get through this, because I think I'll get into it. So for the purposes of this policy, we're talking about electronic communication.
Gotcha.
But I might get to answering your questions. If I don't, I'll come back around in the end, okay?
I'm going to show my ignorance, but what's WCIS?
It's a Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's
oh,
definitely.
What you see
okay.
is what you get. It's
okay.
an old acronym.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, moving along. So the purpose of this policy, we know that social media is intended to be a fun and effective way for many people to share information. It's also a communication vehicle, though, that comes along with ethical and lawful guidelines that we as a city care about. Our social media content, for the purposes of your board positions, also needs to be compliant with our organizational policies. And so, while social media is often an informal way of communicating, it holds the same legal ramifications as a legal contract, for example. Both, depending on the content, can have legal ramifications for the city and represent liability, and that's why we care about social media. Policy application for board members, really applies when you're acting on behalf of your position as a zoning of appeals member, or when making comments that have a negative impact on the city's mission or the credibility of other city representatives or volunteers, I may add. So the policy was really intended to be helpful. Many people think it's intended to be harmful. So we have added this disclaimer right in the beginning. I'm going to read verbatim because I think it's worth doing such. Nothing in this policy is intended to prohibit or infringe upon any communication, speech, or expression that is protected or privileged under law. This includes speech and expression protected under state or federal constitutions, as well as other applicable laws. However, because board and commission members are often considered public ambassadors for the City of Rochester who occupy a trusted position in the community, their statements have the potential to contravene the policies and the mission of the organization. Due to the nature of the work and influence associated with certain volunteer positions, it is necessary that these individuals be subject to certain reasonable, and that's a key word, limitations on their speech and their expression. So you're representing the city in your role, and so that's why we care what you say and do on our behalf. So how does this impact you personally? Well, first, the city does respect your right to post and maintain your own personal sites. We understand that's a common practice today. However, we do ask you to use caution when you're referencing the city, its personnel, or its operation in any manner. Moving on, board members may not use a city symbol, logo, or other organizational identifiers on personal sites or post unauthorized information that purports to be the position of the city. And to go back just a moment, the reason why we've taken somewhat of a strong stand on using city symbols and logos is that many of you know that when you brand an organization, there's a lot of money that gets tied up in branding an organization. There's a lot of money that goes behind the symbols that we develop and use. And the city has roughly 870 employees, and we have probably another 200 plus volunteers. And if everybody were using the city's logos and symbols in the manner that they saw fit, we would soon lose sight of our branding opportunities. So we just asked to restrict the use of city logos. There is an exception to this. If you would get permission from the council or the city administrator, there may be times when it is appropriate to do such, but the policy says that permission must be granted. So moving on, the policy discourages identifying as a board member when commenting on matters pertaining to the city. Or avoid making comments that can be viewed as malicious, obscene, threatening, disparaging, a form of harassment or bullying. If you are compelled to comment, sometimes using a disclaimer, such as these are my own opinions and do not represent those of the city, before you're making the statement may be beneficial or useful. However, we say you own your words. So even if you use a disclaimer but you make a disparaging comment, you're still going to be accountable for the comments that are made. Other potential violations of the policy, and these are common sense, many of you will know these already, so this will be nothing new to most of you. Cyberbullying, stalking, or harassment is prohibited. Release of confidential or private data. Inappropriate use of the city's name or logo, which we just touched on a minute ago. Posting information that is defaming or harmful to the reputation of another person, group, or organization. Or posting information that could compromise the safety or privacy of other individuals. Additionally, posting information that negatively impacts the credibility of other board and commission members relative to the performance of their official duties, making offensive posts meant to intentionally harm another's reputation, or posting comments on the basis of race, sex, disability, religion, or any other status protected by law that contributes to a hostile environment. So, how does this impact your freedom of speech rights? There's two different ways to look at this, as a board member and as a private citizen. So, speech or things that you comment that are made either on duty or off duty that are made in the official capacity of your position, meaning you have information as a result of being on this board, may carry some restrictions and may not be protected speech under the First Amendment, meaning you're commenting on things that you know about just by virtue of your position on the board. Had you not been on the board, you would not have that information to share. You can contrast that with your rights as a private citizen. Speech as a private citizen may be protected when you're speaking on matters of public concern as a private citizen when the statement does not interfere with your board responsibilities. So there's two different elements to look at that. How we analyze free speech, the laws in this area are very complex and they're still evolving. So each situation tends to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. Violations, board members or other volunteers could result in coaching, or if they're more serious, they could result in removal of the board. People often ask me, who has the authority to make that determination? And it's your appointing authority. So if you're appointed by the mayor has that right. If you're appointed by the city council would have that right, or have that decision-making authority. So in legal terms, there's really a balancing test between your freedom of speech rights and the right of the organization to operate efficiently. Both are of public interest. And so we call this the Pickering balance test. So it considers a board member's right to free speech on matters of public concern versus an interest of the organization in promoting efficiency. So balancing the interests of the organization with your rights as a citizen. People often ask me, well, how do you go out and monitor 200 volunteer websites? We don't. We don't have the resources to do that, nor would we even want to do that. More likely that when a violation occurs, it's because someone brings something forward to us and say, here's a copy of a post that I believe was inappropriate. So this is what I would call a reactive policy versus a proactive policy. When a complaint is received, it will generally come to the city administrator and myself, and then we will determine, first and foremost, is the person in question one of our board members or a commission member of the city? And if so, then we'll determine the next steps based on whatever the information we have. I know that there are many people concerned about the social media policy, but since it's been implemented in last November, I'm only aware of what I would say was one serious complaint, and when we looked into it, it wasn't even our board member. So in spite of that, I can say most people from everything I've seen so far are really doing a good job and representing the city very well. So additional reminders, it's always good to analyze the weight of your words. Sometimes what you think they mean and how they might be perceived could be very different. Also looking at the impact that it has on a variety of audiences. It's also good to remember that all communication that's composed or sent or received on city-owned equipment or while sent on in the behalf of your role is considered subject to the Minnesota Data Practices Act. So even if you're sending and communicating on your own equipment, if you're doing it in your official capacity, it may be subject to a data request. Always conduct yourself online in a manner that reflects well in the city, and I'm sure you do that, and avoid posting information that is non-public. So for you, those of you who are really interested in delving deeper into this subject, I've attached one legal case. It's called Bucher versus Howard County. It was handled in the Fourth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals case. I think it was around 2015. And it had to do with Facebook posts that occurred between a battalion chief and a volunteer paramedic regarding news coverage on a gun control issue. I'll let you read the court case if you're interested, but the comments quickly became very disparaging on a number of fronts. And so obviously both a battalion chief and a paramedic are considered trusted employees or volunteers in the community, so what they say and do, of course, has an impact on others. So the key points that came out of that case, however, is that public employees don't relinquish their freedom of speech rights just because they're a government employee. In addition, the U.S. Supreme Court has gone on record saying that it values and encourages freedom of speech rights and does not want to inhibit those rights. But further, it also said that government operational efficiency is very important as well. So certain audiences, such as a battalion chief and a paramedic, might have to accept certain limitations on their freedom of speech rights. And lastly, the First Amendment does not protect volunteers when their speech interests are outweighed by the government's interest in providing efficient and effective services to the public. So, how do you weigh government interests? Well, in this case, the considerations that were looked at, whether the freedom of speech rights outweighed government's interests, were basically these. These are just a few. There were actually more cited in this case law, but did the exchange involve impaired, or did it impact the harmony among employees and volunteer representatives? Did it damage the relationships that currently existed? Did it impact the credibility and the performance of the employee and or the representative or the volunteer? Was there an adverse impact on the government's operation, and did it undermine the mission of the organization? Or was there an abuse of authority that was granted to those employees and representatives? Those are just a few of the things that might be looked at in a situation such as this. So with that said, I so much appreciate the work that you do, and we couldn't live without our volunteers and our board members and our commission members, so thank you for that. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
How many of these talks have you given before?
Do I sound a little robotic? You're about my fourth or fifth one now.
Not at all, no.
How did that court case come out?
In favor of the government side. Mm-hmm. Because a paramedic and the paramedic and the battalion chief, when you're calling on your fire department or your police department, you need to trust that these people are coming in to serve your best interest. And when you start making comments that are disparaging or racial, people lose confidence and trust in that. And these comments sway to that side of it. So it the government operational efficiency outweighed the freedom of speech rights.
Mm-hmm. Question, I guess you brought up earlier, I don't know. Say you write a letter to the editor, say something's going on.
Yeah.
And I wrote several. My question, the one I questioned was the dog licensing and whatever we're going to send out. And I said, let's do the math, let's do that. And the city abolished it. I mean, the whole thing didn't make sense to me, whatever they did. I have no information. I would take the information that the council and the people put out in the news, whatever, and you take that, those facts. I mean, I wasn't given any inside information. Mm-hmm. So how does, I mean, as a board member, that has nothing to do with the planning and zoning, but again, do you take the rights away, the freedom of speech rights or music? That's why I want to know. So if you write and ask, again, I write it in the question, I ask the question, it doesn't make sense, please explain, whatever. So the letters to the editor, I mean, some people look at it disparaging against the city because doing something that you don't think is right or whatever, but it's...
I think when you're writing on interests or matters of public concern, you're fine. I think where sometimes it goes awry is how the letter is written. So if it's written in a disparaging, demeaning manner, that may carry some tone.
Okay, we'll print that.
Yeah, so if it's just factual information, you're generally safer. And as long as it's not impacting the credibility of the organization or the credibility of other people that you may be working with relative to your board role here, you'd probably be fine. It's not prohibiting free speech rights. It's just trying to protect the liabilities that may be incurred when people misrepresent the city or do things that are contrary to the mission of the organization. Does that answer your question, Mr.
Yeah, I guess like I said, because if something comes up, I have no problem with sitting down and drafting a letter to the editor or speaking out about saying, I don't understand this, and if you're in a group of people, I mean, I'm not saying, well, I sit on a city board, and this is the way it should be. I don't even bring up that I sit on the board, so I mean, that's neither here nor there. If they don't see me here or whatever, I don't care. I worked for the federal government for 27 and a half years. I'm well aware of rules and regulations, which you can, but I just sometimes, as things change, I just want to know that if you're in a group and you're able to say, well, I don't really agree with that council policy, that, you know, we should save that building, it should be tore down. So I mean, that's my question, is that...
No, I think you, in the situation you described, you're most likely going to be fine.
Okay. I've watched this be developed, and again, people talk about the different council members, and there was somebody on a different group doing some disparaging remarks about a contractor in the city. I can't recall all the details, but to me, we missed the whole point, because where this really came from was police policies. When we had a policeman had a Facebook thing up that was really negative on Black Lives Matter, and ended up coming up to this thing with boards, and I think we just missed the whole target. But I do understand better that social media does have a tendency to be a little more pointed than other things, like Jan says. You're not going to get a letter to the editor that's going to be, you know, the way the caustic comments that go on online.
Well, at the end of the day, the city is liable for what you do when you're representing the city, so obviously we want to be very cautious with that. You are correct, we did have a situation with a police officer, and when that occurred, the question that surfaced is, what can we have done to prevent this? And one of the resolutions was, maybe we would have had a policy, maybe we would have been clear about the parameters, we would have helped all involved, and so that naturally morphed over into boards and commission members as well. Maybe we should provide guidelines, because anybody can use social media and get themselves in trouble quickly, even if they didn't intend to.
The police had a good personal responsibility policy in place that should have covered it. They didn't have to have a separate social media. But
yes, we had that debate internally as well. Yeah. Yes, code of conduct is what you're referring to. Yes, we had that conversation internally as well.
Yeah. And I thought the whole situation was handled well, so I don't have that.
Thank you. Yeah. Any
other questions? Okay. Is there anything else that anyone would like to bring up? Would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn? Anyone
second?
All right.
Thank you again for your time. Thank you, Linda.